Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from The Voice of America on Thursday, December 10th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Sandra Nyaira.
Here are our top stories this evening.
ZANU-PF expels the senior members as some Zimbabweans dismiss the party's annual People's Conference as a waste of time.
I just believe these are the same conference that we have had before. Nothing can change. Just ministers and MP who are pushing their agendas, personal interests without the nation's well-being at large. So it's one of those conferences whereby it's either just celebrating something that is not there.
The Harare City Council today demolished 50 houses said to have been constructed illegally near Highland Shopping Center.
And Zimbabwe joined other countries today in commemorating Human Rights Day, with activists and opposition political parties castigating the government for continued rights violations.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Some Harare residents say they are unlikely to benefit from the ZANU-PF conference, which started a few days ago and will end on Saturday. The conference, which will be officially opened Friday by President Robert Mugabe in Victoria Falls, is expected to focus on the state of the party and Zimbabwe's declining economy. Our correspondent Patricia Mudadegwa reports from Harare.
Several senior ZANU-PF officials, including Central Committee members Sylvester Nguni, Christwell Mutemachaka, and Batsirai Musono of Mashonaland Central, have been expelled from the party for being supporters of expelled former Vice President Joyce Mujuru. Others have also been targeted for siding with current Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, believed to be harboring presidential ambitions. Some party activists are demanding that the party should revert to a constitutional system in which one seat in the presidium, comprising the president, his two deputies and chairperson, was reserved for a woman. Indications are that First Lady Grace Mugabe is eyeing the presidential seat together with Mnangagwa, President Mugabe's long-standing blue-eyed boy. The ZANU-PF conference is not an elective event, but some party activists are suspected to be allegedly attempting to elevate Mrs. Mugabe to the presidium within the next 3 days. But Harare residents say all this will not bring food on the table for their families. Glenview resident Tigere Mayembe said Zimbabweans should not expect any surprises from the conference. He said resources being used at the conference could be put to better use than holding such a huge event.
I just believe these are the same conference that we have had before. Nothing can change. Just ministers who are pushing their agendas, personal interest. It's one of those conferences whereby it's either just celebrating something that is not there, just wasting people's money, wasting taxpayers' money, instead of building roads, instead of improving clinics and everything. Why are you holding such a lavish conference without pushing the agendas to rediscover our economy?
Several other residents expressed the same sentiments, saying ZANU-PF normally holds such conferences which never benefit local people. But Passmore Taizwe said the people should not ignore the ZANU-PF conference. Taizwe told Studio 7 that whatever decisions are taken at the conference will affect the country's policies, as ZANU-PF is the ruling party. He equated the conference to a company's annual general meeting in which important and binding decisions are made.
It is important. It's there on the calendar that they've got to have an event at the end of every year. And it's happening, whether we like it or not. That has got to have an impact on our livelihoods, because most of the people that lead us, be it in cabinet or in our everyday lives, you know, are from the ruling party. So whatever is going to come out of that conference has got an impact, you know, on the generality of the population of Zimbabwe to some extent, despite the fact that you belong to that party or you don't.
Memory Dlovu also said she hoped the conference would resolve factionalism currently gripping ZANU-PF so that instead of fighting each other, the ruling party can concentrate on tackling the country's ailing economy.
So maybe after the conference, we expect the president to talk to his guys, to the ministers and all the politicians to try and normalize things, because we are tired of politics without any economic benefits.
Political analyst Ernest Mudzengi said the ZANU-PF annual conference has just become a ritual that does not address the socio-economic problems bedeviling Zimbabwe.
Yeah, ZANU-PF being the ruling party, obviously one would expect that its conference would affect the way things happen in the country. But to be precise, this is a mere talk show. They are simply going to deliberate and deliberate. That's not exactly where decisions are made. They will come with certain resolutions, maybe recycle resolutions that have been there. So really, I don't think it's just a ritual by ZANU-PF. It's about power flexing. I don't think it will immediately have an impact on the economy. The issue that is troubling Zimbabwe right now are pressing hardships economically, and people want an immediate remedy, and I don't expect that to come from ZANU-PF.
The ZANU-PF conference started sometime this week with a Politburo meeting in Harare and is expected to end on Saturday. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Patricia Mdadigwa.
The Harare City Council today demolished 50 houses said to have been constructed illegally near Highland Shopping Center. According to Simbarashe Moyo, chairman of the combined Harare Residents Association, the affected people have now been left in the open with nowhere to go. He tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube the houses are tied to so-called land barons who collect large sums of money from unsuspecting residents and then construct illegal structures in the city.
Today, the city of Harare continued with its program of demolishing houses, and they are saying that these houses were constructed on illegal sites, and the issue of land barons is again coming in. So they are saying that we want to clean the city, we want to make sure that things are done orderly. But as the residents, we are actually worried because, the rains are actually in the corner, and we are talking of more than 30 families that have been left in the open after their houses have been demolished.
Where are the demolitions taking place right now?
Today, the demolitions took place at a place which is located near Highland Shopping Center. More than 30 families have been affected, and we are being told that the people who had constructed the houses, they did that through a cooperative. And there is also the issue of land barons who were told just, parceled that land to themselves and ended up selling the sales to the people who then constructed the houses. Innocent people who were not aware of what was happening.
So what is going to happen to the families after this?
Obviously, the families are now in the open, and it's just about to rain at the moment. So we are very much worried about the welfare of these people, concerned that it is about to rain now. We are going to have cases where property is going to be destroyed. Issues to do with the diseases are going to, to occur. And all these other challenges that these people are now facing. So as people representing residents, we are certainly going to have a serious meeting with these residents to find a way of making sure that they are cushioned from all these challenges.
That was Simbarashe Moyo, chairman of the combined Harare Residents Association, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. City Councillor Peter Moyo says Harare residents should never construct any illegal structures.
There are people who invaded any open space that they see as an open space. Some are on the wetlands. Some are on sewer pipes and water. Some are under electricity. They're under ZESA cables. So those houses are not suitable to be built on those areas. And we cannot leave it like that.
What is going to happen to the residents in those places where you are demolishing the houses?
If they were given by council, then they can come back to council. If they were given by somebody,
they have to go to that somebody.
Why is this issue prevalent in Harare, the issue of land barons, you know, giving residents houses?
Because this is the capital city. There are a lot of people who are staying here. There are some people who are doing it for political expedience. So those people, they would just take the law into their hands. They would find that even the police, even the National Army, they are invading open spaces, even in industrial areas. They go and build houses where they are supposed to be industry. So these are politicians who want to politicize things which are not supposed to be politicized. They want to think that they are a law unto themselves. But then, you know, it's not supposed to be like that. We are a citizen which is supposed to abide by the rules and regulations governing our own country. So we must, everybody should adhere to the local authority, planning authority, for them to be given where they are supposed to do their business, be it business, be it residential or whatever. Nobody except the council or government is supposed to give anyone land.
But is there any long-term plan to actually end this kind of crisis?
The problem is that there is a very high rate of unemployment in this country. So these people, even if you say, can you come and pay land, intrinsic land value, they are not able to pay. So they want to do those things for free. They are going to build where there is a wetland, there, cables, whatever, whatever. They are going to build there because it's for Mahara.
That was Harare City Councillor Peter Moyo speaking with Studio 7.
Zimbabwe joined other countries today in commemorating Human Rights Day, with activists and opposition political parties castigating the government for continued rights violations and failure to align the country's laws with the new constitution. Civil society organizations led by the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights and the Zimbabwe Human Rights NGO Forum are also hunkering down in the capital this evening to assess Harare's handling of civil liberties, with a special focus on the new charter. Top human rights defenders will be crowned at the event. While the Human Rights Watch criticized Zimbabwe for failing to protect children's rights by not addressing the scourge of child marriages, Amnesty International petitioned President Mugabe to, quote, intervene and set up an independent judge-led commission of inquiry into the disappearance of Itai Dzamara. And the MDC, led by Woshmi Ncube, said Zimbabweans have no chance of attaining and enjoying their human rights and freedoms from economic bondage as long as they continue to follow corrupt leaders who do more harm than good. Reporter Ntungameli Nkomo reached the rights lawyer Dewa Mavinga of the Human Rights Watch, who says civil liberties remain a mirage in Zimbabwe.
On paper, we have human rights norms and standards and human rights laws, but in terms of the reality of enjoying them, they remain largely aspirational. We have the 2013, the new constitution, that has an expansive bill of rights. Citizens are not yet fully enjoying those rights for a number of reasons, including the lack of alignment of laws, the lack of political will and commitment, and also at another level, the lack of provision of resources towards ensuring that people enjoy human rights.
Would you say the situation is getting any better or worse?
It is a mixed, because in terms of on paper, there has been progress. Clearly, the new constitution is more progressive from a human rights point of view. But in terms of lived reality, also particularly because of the spreading extreme poverty, it is one of the key drivers of human rights abuse and violations in the area of socio-economic rights. So people's access to education, people's access to health, people's access to adequate food and to water, all these are we now experience more violations in this area of socio-economic rights. Although when you look at civil and political rights, there has been a decline in levels of political violence, which you compare with, say, the widespread political violence of 2008. But when you look at socio-economic rights, things are getting worse.
And what is it, Mr. Mavinga, that you want to see the government doing right on this particular day?
What is needed is a clear commitment and political will by the government in terms of putting resources and prioritizing human rights respect. That is the first thing that needs to happen. internal squabbles and fighting around succession, and the headlines in the papers all have to do with jostling for political power and not meeting the aspirations and needs of the people of Zimbabwe.
Rights lawyer Dewa Mavinga of the Human Rights Watch on the line with reporter Ntunga Milinkomo from Harare.
Some people in Botswana say their country is losing its fight against the influx of illegal immigrants from Zimbabwe, with border villages the hardest hit. Mompati Tlankane, Joseph Tirelo, and several citizens told Studio 7 the country is failing to control the large number of Zimbabweans being forced to leave due to serious economic hardships. They suggested that Botswana should pass strict regulations or throw illegal immigrants into jail in order to prevent the influx of illegal immigrants into the country. Botswana, which deports more than 1,300 Zimbabweans each month at a cost of over 1 million pula or $100,000, has been home for some Zimbabweans over the years. Botswana's Labour and Home Affairs Minister Edwin Bachu was not available for comment as he was said to be busy.
It is now time for us to look at regional and international news.
Human rights group Amnesty International says the corruption crisis in football's world governing body, FIFA, is drawing attention away from abuses of migrant workers helping to construct venues for the 2022 World Cup in Qatar.
U.S. President Barack Obama signed sweeping education reforms into law today, giving states and local communities new authority to set standards for students and teachers and limiting the scope of benchmark testing.
And Burundi's foreign minister says his government will implement swift positive measures to end the crisis that has beleaguered the country since April this year, when President Pierre Nkurunziza decided to seek a third term.
As reported earlier, ZANU-PF is in conference in the resort town of Victoria Falls. But it is not the ZANU-PF of old, as fissures continue to grow as President Robert Mugabe ages and factions galvanize expectantly to take over from him. Expulsions are now the order of the day. For perspective on what is happening in the ruling party and whether any surprises may be looming on the horizon, we turned to political analyst Dr. Takawe Framshow and Chamu Madiridze. Joe says the serious power struggles in ZANU-PF are due to Mr. Mugabe's old advancing age.
My analysis of events in ZANU-PF is very clear, that ZANU-PF has an old president, and because of the age of the president, there is a struggle for power, serious struggle for power to replace the president, who may either die anytime or resign anytime. And the serious jostling for political power has led to an intense internal struggle, or a dog-eat-dog situation, in which a lot of people think that there is a possible chance to succeed the president. And therefore, they are also competing for the ears of the president. And this, therefore, has led to a lot of lies and told stories with the consequent expulsion of members from ZANU-PF.
Your take, Mr. Madiridze, on what is happening in ZANU-PF currently?
This is normal to a party like ZANU-PF. You find factions coming up and others dying away. This is normal because ZANU-PF as a party is old. That's point number one. Another point is that the leader of that party is old and hasn't been in power for too long, because there was no succession plan since 1980 up to now. There was no succession plan, and this is causing the development of factions and the dissolving of other factions. This is all because of the succession question. Once that succession question has been answered, we won't have problems in ZANU-PF. It will be a stable party. These suspensions and these expulsions will continue unless and until the succession question has been resolved.
Coming back to you, Mr. Joe, looking at what happened last year, we were all shocked when Mai Mujuru was booted out of the party. Do you see another shocker coming up or brewing up that we may have Mr. Mnangagwa no longer being the president or the vice president, rather? Do you see that happening over the weekend?
Well, the events in ZANU-PF are unpredictable. Unless ZANU-PF is self-destructive or wants to end itself, I don't foresee a possibility that the vice president, Comrade Mnangagwa, may be deposed or that he may be replaced by the wife of the president, Comrade Grace Mugabe. I don't see such a situation happening. But, you know, ZANU-PF is unpredictable. No one ever thought that ZANU-PF could expel the former vice president, Joyce Mujuru, former gurus like Didmus Mutasa, as other luminaries of the liberation struggle. My point is very clear that elevating people with no liberation history like the wife of the president and relegating people with credible liberation struggle in spite of their cruelty, I think would be suicidal.
Coming to you, Mr. Madirize, you were talking earlier on about the succession plan. Does Mr. Mugabe have a succession plan, or events are basically overtaking him right now?
He does have a succession plan, which he doesn't want to reveal anyway. This plan revolves around his relatives and those who come from Mashonaland province, those who come from maybe from within the Gushungo clan. This succession plan cannot be unpacked now because the war veterans might not agree with the plan. They are the key stakeholders of ZANU-PF. And if they don't agree with the plan, the plan will be doomed to fail.
What are your expectations of this conference? What do you think is going to happen?
This conference is going to be an eye-opener to most of the people who are not aware of what is actually happening in ZANU-PF. It is going to reveal to us that the issue of factions, the issue of G40 and this other old guard faction is not just a thing of the private media. The divisions are going to be clearer than before. And if they are not careful, this conference might actually mark the downfall of ZANU-PF and maybe the downfall of other key members of that particular organization called ZANU-PF.
Dr. Shaw, do you agree that this could mark the end or the beginning of the end for ZANU-PF if things are not handled properly?
Unfortunately, I may not agree. One thing which I agree with him is that this conference would reveal the major weaknesses of ZANU. But I do not agree that then these weaknesses may lead to the demise of ZANU. You see, because ZANU uses the army to plan, they have several scenarios. So after noting several weaknesses, it may then give also Mugabe an opportunity now to consult the army, to come up with a grand plan to force people into unity under his terms using the army. So there are two possibilities, possibly of weakening it, but also strengthening it after realizing the major weaknesses dividing the country or dividing the people. Because the never listen to what the president does. Even if he starts getting people for being divided, he is well known for indicating to turn right when he's turning left. So there are two possibilities, of course, revealing the weaknesses of the party, that in itself is a threat. But at the same time, it may also, therefore, then give an opportunity for the army to come up with a strategic plan to ensure that they unite the people.
Political analyst Takavafira Joe and Chamu Badiridze speaking with us earlier on from Mashingo and Cape Town in South Africa, respectively.
As the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence drew to an end today and kicked off the World Human Rights Day, women's rights groups in Zimbabwe say a lot needs to be done to align the country's laws with the new constitution. The Women's Coalition of Zimbabwe today held a press conference in Harare where women's rights groups shared ideas on the way forward in urging policymakers and government to implement laws that promote the rights of marginalized groups. Virginia Mwanigwa of the Women's Coalition group tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye there's lack of political will to implement some of the laws that are already there and this needs to change.
As the Women's Coalition of Zimbabwe, we decided to hold a press conference where we would do an analysis of what is the status of women as the year 2015 ends. What is it that has happened in Zimbabwe that has gone well? What is it that still remains to be done? And what is it we should be recommending to government? So we were looking across our clusters of competence as Women's Coalition, which include constitutional and legal affairs, which includes women's participation in politics and decision-making, women in the economy, women and health, women and education, women and peace building, women and the law, and then also looking at the media. Gender-based violence was also one of the areas we looked at.
What were some of the findings that you got from these studies that you had throughout this year?
The general finding across all those clusters is that Zimbabwe has done very well in actually adopting a good constitution and some laws and some frameworks to address the key issues around these areas. What remains to be done is effective implementation, because it's something that has started, but we need to really be very serious and start to implement.
How can this be implemented?
Part of how we can ensure implementation is by putting resources to the plans, to the policies, to the constitution that we have adopted as a country.
That was Virginia Muanigwa of the Women's Coalition of Zimbabwe speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye from Harare.
Residents of Harare are embracing a new form of energy that is alleviating the impact of power cuts. Solar energy is now in full effect in some areas to ensure uninterrupted power supply to light the city's streets. JA Solar Company has reportedly signed a multi-million dollar deal to supply 100 megawatt photovoltaic modules to one of the first three large-scale ground-mounted solar power facilities in Zimbabwe. Studio 7's Satenda Gumbo has details.
As a solution to the constant power cuts that often leave the city streets dark and open to criminal activity, the Harare City Council has begun installing solar-powered street lights to illuminate the central business district at night, with plans to extend the project to other parts of the city. Zimbabwe is increasingly turning to the sun for its energy requirements, with the government hoping to build billion-dollar solar plants countrywide, depending on resource availability. According to Harare municipal officials, solar street lights will reduce electricity bills and save the city about $200,000 each month. The $15 million solar streetlight project is a partnership with a Zambian firm, reported Reuters. The first phase of the rollout is in the central business district, with plans to extend the project to provide citywide street lighting. Harare Municipal Spokesperson Michael Chideme says the two-year project will see the installation of 4,000 solar street lights in the city.
We believe they are very sustainable because we did our survey, our pilots, to see which ones were the best, and we feel the ones that we are using are very sustainable. And yes, they have a lifespan of up to 15 years, right? So 15 years is quite a lifetime, and they can always be renewed.
Solar energy projects are also expected to be developed in other cities, with Gweru, the country's third largest city, also planning to install solar-powered streetlights. Area residents are welcoming the switch to solar energy, which will reduce the blackouts caused by power cuts. Harare resident Morgan Goa is one of them.
Well, considering the fact that there's a lack of electricity in Zimbabwe, I think the solar project has done a lot of changes to the city of Harare.
Another resident of Harare, Honest Mutusha, concurs.
We are happy about that because electricity in Zimbabwe is currently a big challenge. So substituting that with solar streetlights, it's a very good move.
While Zimbabwe's energy ministry is hopeful that broadening the use of solar energy will help ease the country's long-running energy crisis, many are concerned that the capital-intensive solar project could be delayed as the government struggles to attract international partners and investors for the project. However, the recent signing of mega deals between Zimbabwe and China during the visit of President Xi Jinping will release the much-needed funding for the energy project. For Studio 7, this is Tatenda Gumbo from Washington.
Thanks, Tatenda. Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when the Women's Forum will be talking with listeners and experts about the end of 16 days of activism against gender-based violence and the International Human Rights Day.
To join the discussion, as usual, text us at 001-202 465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios. That's all we had for you tonight. This is Sandra Nyaira. Good night.
And Chris Gande. Good night.